there's always some sort of oppression, whether it's an emotional oppression or legal oppression or both. And the only choice I felt I've ever had was to be myself, no matter what the cost. I mean, that was just the only way I was going to ever live my life.
Society's Child, of course, was a groundbreaking song, but how old were you when that came out?
14 when I wrote it, 15 when it was released, 16 when it was a hit, and 17 when I was a has-been.
Oh, boy.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Anti-Prop 8 briefs bombard California's top court, Burroughs takes no pride in his easy way out, and Ian celebrates her marvelous musical journey. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Lee Moore.
And I'm John Torres.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending January 17, 2009. Literally hundreds of labor, faith, legal, people of color, and women's groups asked the California Supreme Court to invalidate Proposition 8 this week. The deadline for the filing of such friend of the court or amicus briefs in the case was January 16th, but the court is not expected to hear oral arguments until March. Equality advocates are challenging the measure passed by California voters in November that constitutionally defines marriage as exclusively heterosexual. In addition to defending Proposition 8, its proponents also demand in their briefs that the court nullify some 18,000 marriages of same-gender couples that were held while the May Supreme Court ruling authorizing them was in force. Lambda Legal, the National Center for Lesbian Rights, and the American Civil Liberties Union are among the advocacy groups urging the court to overturn the measure as a violation of the state constitution's equal protection provisions. The California NAACP, Mexican American Legal Defense and Educational Fund, Asian Pacific American Legal Center, and California Rural Legal Assistance each submitted amicus briefs this week calling on the high court to overturn Proposition 8. State and national women's rights groups adding to that course included Legal Momentum, formerly known as the National Organization for Women Legal Defense and Education Fund, the National Association of Women Lawyers, the California Women's Law Center, and Equal Rights Advocates.
The California Labor Federation and United Healthcare Workers were among more than 50 statewide union groups to also file their opposition to Proposition 8. Major California-based companies, including Google, Levi Strauss, and the San Francisco Chamber of Commerce, told the court in their briefs that writing inequality into the Constitution is bad for business. More than 65 current and former members of the state legislature, led by its present leaders, also filed a brief asking the High Court to overturn Proposition 8. 40 legal groups from across the country, including the San Francisco and Los Angeles County Bar Associations, filed their own collective Friend of the Court brief challenging the measure. Professors at Harvard, Stanford, Yale, Berkeley, and several other prestigious universities and law schools also filed briefs asking the court to overturn Proposition 8. A coalition led by the California Council of Churches and other religious leaders and faith organizations filed their amicus brief earlier in the week.
Among those filing briefs with the California Supreme Court in support of the marriage ban were the Liberty Council, a nonprofit Christian legal organization that says it defends religious freedom and the traditional family, the Pacific Justice Institute, which defines itself as a nonprofit legal defense organization for religious freedom and civil liberties, and the Alliance Defense Fund, a ubiquitous conservative Christian legal group. In addition to urging the High Court to uphold Proposition 8 and nullify already contracted same-gender marriages in the state, some of its proponents have filed a separate lawsuit in federal court claiming that the measure's supporters have been harassed. They're asking the court to invalidate a voter-approved state campaign reform law requiring that the names of major donors to political campaigns be made public. Prop 8 opponents called it hypocritical to demand that the so-called will of the people be upheld on Proposition 8 and that the same will in another voter-approved initiative be overturned. And reports also circulated this week that the Mormon Church has been less than forthcoming about the degree to which it supported and funded the Yes on 8 effort. Federal law forbids religious organizations, which as such enjoy tax-exempt status, from substantially lobbying for political legislation. A California activist has filed suit charging that the church's financial support of Prop 8 was substantial, therefore violating tax laws, election disclosure laws, and the constitutionally mandated separation of church and state.
Meanwhile, same-gender couples and their supporters held rallies in several U.S. cities on January 10th, calling for the repeal of the so-called Federal Defense of Marriage Act, or DOMA. The protests were part of a continuing LGBT equality campaign by the online-based Join the Impact, which sparked the much larger demonstrations last November in opposition to state bans on marriage equality. Rallies were held on January 10th in several California cities, including Pasadena, West Hollywood, and San Diego. Protesters braved extremely cold weather in Boston and Chicago to hold anti-DOMA rallies there. Other demonstrations were reported in Montgomery, Alabama, Greenville, North Carolina, Wichita, Kansas, Seattle, Washington, and Boise, Idaho.
And two LGBT rights organizations are collaborating on a global website that will help young queer activists around the world work for equality. The International Gay and Lesbian Youth Organization and the International Lesbian and Gay Association say the site will allow members to share their experiences, ideas, and expertise, and to work together to solve problems and run projects. The working languages of the list are English, Spanish, and French. Individuals join by becoming members of an email group, which is moderated for safety, a feature that could be especially important for members who live in countries where LGBT rights are not recognized. For more information about the LGBT Youth World List, visit www.iglyo.com or www.ilga.org.
In other news, the notoriously homophobic Alliance Defense Fund, a Christian legal group that has fought LGBT equality in U.S. state ballot battles and court cases for the past several years, took its right-wing agenda to Europe this week. It submitted a legal memo to the European Parliament opposing a series of recommendations drafted by Italian MEP Giusto Catania to battle homophobia and extend legal recognition to same-gender couples across the continent. ADF legal counsel Roger Kiska argued that such a move would damage the institution of the family. The Parliament should not allow itself to be used as a vehicle to further spread a damaging social agenda. The recommendations were nevertheless approved, with 401 votes in favor, 220 against, and 67 abstentions.
Human Rights Watch drew attention this week to increasing violence against transgender people in Honduras. It cited the murder of trans activist Cynthia Nicole earlier this month, killed in a drive-by shooting, and said it was only the latest in an escalating campaign against gender-variant people in the Central American country. The Global Human Rights Group also documented several similar murders in late 2008. Their report said that the authorities need to find and prosecute the perpetrators of this and previous attacks against the trans community. Indira Mendoza of the Honduran lesbian feminist group Catracha said that the transgender community is terrified, but these attacks will not silence the community in Honduras, and we will continue to work to ensure that the rights of transgender people are recognized and protected.
The first same-gender union was held last week in Milpa Alta, the most rural and indigenous borough of Mexico City. According to a report by the Spanish news agency EFE, Marco Aurelio Morales, director general of the borough's government and judiciary, presided over the civil union ceremony of two women, identified only as Nancy and Carmen. Morales proudly said that, "This is the first time in the borough of Milpa Alta that we have created a union of this kind." It's the least populated of the Mexican capital's 16 boroughs with some 115,000 inhabitants, but is the second biggest in area, which is mostly agricultural. Mexico City's civil unions law went into effect at the end of 2006. It extends most of the rights of marriage to gay and lesbian couples. Same-gender unions have also been made legal in the northern Mexican state of Coahuila.
The leader of the United Nations HIV/AIDS agency criticized Senegal this week for jailing 9 gay men, saying that homophobic acts would not help efforts to prevent HIV infection in the West African country. A Senegalese court sentenced each of the 9 men to 8 years in prison last week. It's the harshest such sentence ever imposed in a country where homosexuality is outlawed. The men, all under 30, were arrested in December during a dinner party in a Dakar suburb at the apartment of one of the country's leading gay rights and HIV/AIDS activists. No one was reportedly having sex, but the police cited numerous condoms and lubricants found in the apartment during the raid as proof of sexual activity, even though they're standard tools of HIV/AIDS activists whose goal is to educate gay men about safe sex practices. UNAIDS Executive Director Michelle Sidibe said that universal access to HIV prevention, treatment, care, and support must be accessible to all people in Senegal who are in need, including men who have sex with men. The case is currently under appeal.
And finally, in honor of this week's momentous change in Washington, D.C., about which we'll have coverage from a queer perspective next week, the following message. Source unknown, recently circulated online. Dear world, the United States of America, for over 200 years, your high-quality supplier of the ideals of liberty and democracy, would like to apologize for its 2001-2008 service outage. The technical fault that led to this 8-year service interruption has been located, and the parts responsible for it were replaced Tuesday night, November 4th. Early tests of the newly installed equipment indicate that it is functioning correctly, and we expect it to be fully functional by late January. We apologize for any inconvenience caused by the outage, and we look forward to resuming full service, and hopefully even to improving it in years to come. Thank you for your patience and understanding. Sincerely, the USA.
That's News Wrap for the week ending January 17th, 2009, written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm John Torres.
And I'm Lee Moore.
Society's child learned the truth at 17 and broke silence a few years later. Her saga continues later in the program.
He died 3 years ago, and instead of feeling that wave of grief, I didn't feel sadness, and I didn't feel longing. I felt free.
Last time on This Way Out, author Augustine Burroughs described the destructive relationship with his father that forms the basis for his latest work, A Wolf at the Table. Unlike the immensely popular Running with Scissors, this time Burroughs was not laughing. He explains why he's not proud to be gay and delights at the blurring of sex and gender in the conclusion of his chat with our Brisbane correspondent, John Frame.
I think it is really useful for gay men, lesbians, bisexuals who go through like significantly larger proportionate incidents of oppression in the world, that you can say, well, here I am, and I've come through this extraordinarily challenging upbringing, and yet I'm happy and focused and getting on with my life.
Yeah, it's essential. I mean, there's always some sort of oppression, whether it's an emotional oppression or legal oppression or both. And the only choice I felt I've ever had was to be myself, no matter what the cost. I mean, that was just the only way I was going to ever live my life. You know, it's interesting. In terms of being gay, and this is often, I've said this before, and it always gets misquoted, so people never really understand what I mean, but I'm going to explain it now. I've often asked if I'm proud of being gay, and I'm really not. I'm not proud of being gay any more than I'm proud of being right-handed, and the reason for that is because I never struggled with it, and I was never told it was bad. I didn't go to school. You know, I wasn't bullied in high school about it, and when I the adopted family, it just was nothing. It was not. No one ever talked about it. It was no issue. So I never overcame anything. I just have been like this since the dawn of time, and nothing changed. So therefore, what's to be proud of? I haven't earned the right to be proud. I didn't do anything, but I am proud when I see, and I meet them all the time, these 20-year-olds, these 30-year-olds, even 50, 60-year-olds who grew up with extremely religious or oppressive families, who were indoctrinated since birth to believe that being gay or lesbian was the worst possible thing you could be on a par with bestiality and pedophilia, and yet they still do it. Those, that makes me proud. Those are the people who should be proud. And if I had overcome that level of oppression, I would be proud. But it was handed to me on a silver platter. That's the one thing about my life that that was easy, is my sexual orientation. And it's the same thing, too, with gender. I mean, you know, we made great progress in that area. And now people feel comfortable with even the concept of being gender neutral or being, you know, a little bit of this and a little bit of that. There's still a lot more that needs to happen. But even in that area, I think there is there's less of a stigma than there was when I was growing up. I mean, and when I see it now too. I mean, I see it, the young guys, you know, I have a huge male readership, straight guys, huge. And, you know, they show up and they've got the $85 shag haircuts and they've got the pedicures and, you know, their wives are like, they've got short cropped hair and like really strong arms and biceps and triceps. And, you know, their wives definitely had relationships with girls in college, but realized, nah. And so, you know, this is the new modern couple and they've got their kid and the dad's the one who's changing the diapers and slobbering all over the baby. I mean, it used to be you could sort of tell. Who's gay? He's gay. Yeah, you can tell. You can absolutely cannot tell anymore. I mean, you know, it's been an amazing transformation, and I love seeing it. I love seeing these very sensitive. I mean, these guys come over and they cry, you know, and they're very emotional. They're just, it's not like a big, because they grew up in a world where being gay wasn't the worst thing you could be. So they, of course, were able to think about it. Am I gay? No, he's cute, but would I want to have sex with him? No, but I like his hair, and it makes them better people, and it makes them much better fathers. And I think that that's something that my generation has suffered from, is the fact that fathers born in the 1930s didn't want to raise sissies, so they were standoffish, they were aloof, they weren't physically demonstrative or emotionally available, and that's painful. And that's something I think of the vast majority of men my age. If they had a complaint about their father, it would be that they were perhaps not as emotionally available. But you know that has changed. That has changed, and it's and women have had a large part to do with that. I mean, the generation before mine, I spent 18 years in advertising, and every one of them I worked for women. I've worked for women all my life. Well, it's their daughters. You know, my boss, my old bosses. These are the daughters now that are coming up in the world, and they've never had oppression. They've never found a glass ceiling. The only divide among the sexes for these women is that the men, you know, they're lazier and they don't make as much money as the women. I mean, that's the reality for a lot of young women these days. You know, that there is no ceiling, there's no limit, and they work out. Their husbands don't, because guys don't work out anymore. You know, it's the new flat butt, open toed sandal guy, and it's great.
That was A Wolf at the Table author Augustine Burroughs spending part of his Australian book tour with This Way Out Brisbane correspondent John Frame.
This is Augustine Burroughs, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian news magazine.
Come to my door. And shining black as night. My mother went to answer. You know that you look so fine. Now I could understand your tears and your shame. She called you boy.
She was dubbed a female Bob Dylan when she burst on the scene as a young teen in 1965, and singer-songwriter Janis Ian has been bursting the consciousness of her listeners ever since. She chronicles her memorable journey in an autobiography and an accompanying double CD set, and now with This Way Out correspondents Dixie Treichel and John Townsend.
Tell us a little bit about your beginnings.
I started when I was 12. I started writing songs. I picked up the guitar at summer camp when I was 10, and then I saw a Buffy St. Marie album, and I noticed that she had written one of the songs, and I thought, oh, that sounds like fun. So I started writing. I sent my first song into Broadside magazine. It was published when I was 13, and they asked whether I would come into New York City to do a hootenanny. I did that, and things just kind of fell my way. I mean, I was very fortunate.
And Society's Child, of course, was a groundbreaking song, but how old were you when that came out?
14 when I wrote it, 15 when it was released, 16 when it was a hit, and 17 when I was a has-been.
Oh, boy.
That's a pretty easy chronology.
Well, now, that song was met with a lot of hostility. Can you tell us a bit about that?
The song itself is about a black boy dating a white girl, unfortunately still relevant today. So when it came out, a lot of people wouldn't play it because of the black-white issue, and it was released 3 times by my record company, and then Leonard Bernstein took an interest in it. He featured it on a Sunday night television special. It took almost 10 minutes of time talking to me and talking about the song, and overnight everybody was playing it, and overnight I was a star, and overnight I was getting death threats. So it was all pretty exciting.
Gosh.
At 17, also, I believe, won you a Grammy, is that right?
It did. It won 2 Grammys.
Society's Child, my autobiography.
I took last year off and I wrote my autobiography. It was interesting looking back because there were so many things and people that, before I started writing, I thought were so important. In the writing of it, I discovered that really what was important and the common thread in my life was my work. People were great. I mean, my partner of the last 20 years, Pat, is certainly an important part of my life, but at the end of the day, internally, it's the work that's important.
And then you have The Best of Janis Ian, the autobiography songs, and that's a 2-CD set that's just been released.
That's correct. I'm really proud of it, just because I've been trying to get the record companies to let me remaster the early stuff for, over 10 years now. And they finally all agreed, and they sent us all the stuff we needed to remaster from the sources. So it sounds better than anything I've put out in a long time in the way of compilations. And in North America, it's the only best of.
And you've had some new albums out these past years.
I have. Focus the New Black was the most recent one, and Billy's Bones before it. I went indie pretty early, and one of the luxuries is that you don't have a record company sitting there telling you when to record or what to record or how to record.
How do you see the current music scene these days?
Pretty healthy. I mean, healthy in terms of the quality of work that's coming out among performers. You know, I think there's a lot of really good artistry out there. In terms of business, it's probably pretty dismal. But then again, music industry sort of brought that on themselves.
Yeah, you've actually advocated for downloading of music. You're okay with that?
I'm more than okay. We have free downloads all over my site. Free ringtones, free downloads, you name it.
What is the problem with the record industry? Why can't they understand that this is a good thing?
Well, I talk about it. I wrote an article about it called The Internet Debacle. Like any entrenched corporate structure, they don't like change. And if they do embrace change, it's only so they can control it. The record companies have these huge back catalogs. I mean, I know I've got 4 albums out of print out of my 25 or 6. If those were up on iTunes, people would buy them. Right now, they're just sitting there. The record company won't give them back to me. They won't let me manufacture them unless I promise to do 10,000 units a year, which for somebody my size is unaffordable. So they're just sitting there not making anybody any money. I don't mean to sound so harsh about my own industry. I grew up in this business. But they're slowly waking up. Sony and Universal, two of the biggest companies out there, gave me a great rate so that I could do this CD set and were supportive every step of the way. And I think that's indicative of the change that's happening. I feel pretty hopeful about it.
Speaking about record companies, how was the response when you came out as being a lesbian?
Well, I was outed by the Village Voice in 78. But nobody talked about it. Fortunately for me, because at 17 would have disappeared off the airwaves. And when I came out loudly with Breaking Silence, it was mainly because Irvish Evade, who was then the head of NGLTF, urged me to come out publicly. This was before Melissa or KD came out. And she quoted teenage statistics to me. I think it was 3 in 10 male teenagers who tried suicide because they thought they might be gay. And she said, you know, these people never had a role model. You never had a role model, you know what that feels like. Don't you think that you owe them that? There was surprisingly little problem. I mean, there are always going to be people who have an issue with it. You know, I live in Nashville, which is certainly really on the front lines. Pat and I are embraced here. We're invited places together. Again, indicative of the change in times that people used to honestly think they'd never, quote, met one before. And people, I think now, know that we're your brothers, we're your sisters, we're your family, sometimes we're your husbands or wives, we're your children. People have learned a certain amount of tolerance over the last 20 years.
Do you want to tell us about your foundation?
Well, I started it when my mom died as a way of honoring her. She had always wanted to go to college, and she had come from that generation that just never gets to go. When she died, my partner and I held an internet auction, which then turned into this foundation. All of the money from my merchandise sales, all of the money from my touring merchandise sales, all goes to the foundation at the end of each year. And what we do with that money is provide college scholarships for people like my mom who are too old to interest the regular scholarship people.
Recently, John Kalacki made a film of you called Janice Ian Live at Grand Center.
He started haranguing me a few years ago wanting to do this special. It really, really worked out for the best because when we went to film it, fans flew in from all over the world, literally, to be a part of it. I think it's one of the more relaxed performances of me on film, and John is one of the best interviewers I know. It's a more relaxed interview than there is about me usually.
It's being played all around the country right now on public television.
It is. We're getting a very good response on it.
Can you tell us some of the songs we can expect to hear on it?
Oh, yeah. There's Jesse, of course, Here Comes the Night, which I haven't done live very much. I do at 17. Can't remember if I did Stars. I play piano, which I can't really do on stage anymore because I injured my left hand about 10, 12 years ago.
Mm.
But I played piano for two songs on this, and that was great. All the hit records from the United States, plus a number that people aren't used to hearing in my live shows.
Mm-hmm.
Had a really good time doing it. It's a great audience.
You got Ma Rainey talking about a jelly roll. Chuck Berry working on a mojo. Bessie Smith singing Bulldagger Blues. Elvis twitching on the evening news. Danger, danger, can't you see? That sex should stay in mystery. So ban that music, yes sirree. That's what America means to me. Jean Cocteau, all the queers will have to go. Mr. Tennessee Williams, Plato too. You gotta give J. Edgar Hoover his due. Danger, danger, can't you see? They're in your local library. So ban those authors, yes sirree. That's what America means to me.
Danger, Danger is from Janice Ian's 2006 album, Folk is the New Black. She spoke with Dixie Trichel and John Townsend. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Lee Moore, John Torres, Rex Wachner with Bill Kelly, John Frame, and Dixie Trichel and John Townsend contributed program material. Janice Ian performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is made possible by donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can support our work, hear our podcasts, or subscribe to CDs or cassettes of our programs. To receive our weekly program email alerts, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on to B.O.B. Taree, New South Wales, K.U.R. Kutztown, Pennsylvania, W.R.N.C. Ashland, Wisconsin, and more than 175 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. And we're all going to stay tuned.